So it's my pleasure to introduce Carol Tomer, former Golden pastor and now lead pastor at Pilgrim in Dickensville, and they're going to talk about stories of pilgrims from Minnesota.
Contemplative worship.
Thank you very much.
So welcome.
Thank you.
So good afternoon. Thank you for being here. I know that the hiking beckons about this time of the afternoon too, so it's good to be together here. Let's begin with a prayer. Come, Lord Jesus, be our guest. With friend, with stranger, with young and old, be among us this day. For we are a people on pilgrimage, the heir et folk povandri, and you are a light to our path and a lamp to our feet. O God, we thank you. A good Vitakar day. Amen. You heard in there a little bit of Swedish, and we'll talk a little more, but that was just a little piece from our Nordic Contemplative Evening Prayer Service. So, as Sharon said, I'm Carol Tomer. Dick Hensold is also here to be a part of our conversation. He's composer in residence at Pilgrim for the Celtic contemplative services we do. And then also in the circle, I want to find out who all is in the circle, but also in the circle and in the title of this session, Contemplative Worship Stories of Pilgrims from Minnesota, I'd like the pilgrims from Minnesota to raise your hands. Okay, so you see that we have a resource of some stories of experience of contemplative worship that we're going to invite them to share if they choose. And I'd also then like to begin by finding out who else is in the circle. And if you would just share any congregation you're connected to and where it's at and any experiences of contemplative worship in those contexts. So would you be willing to just, we'll just go a quick around those who didn't raise your hand as a pilgrim from Minnesota. And I'm going to write down a little notes here.
I'm Kathy Borman. I'm at Dungeness Valley Lutheran Church in Swin, Washington. And I had we had a group of about eight people that do centering prayer. And recently our group grew a little bit because someone came into the church and said they understand we have centering prayer and they want to find a centering prayer group, and they were given my name. Well, I'm one of seven in a small little church. And I said, oh, well, who is it? I don't know, somebody from Minnesota. And I have no idea how. But
okay. Let's go around the front circle.
I'm Bob Twins. I'm from Mount Vernon, Washington.
My name's Mark Hander, and I'm the pastor at Salem Lutheran Church in Mount Vernon, Washington, and contemplative experiences have been formed somewhat from seminary experiments with various professors introducing the thought around contemplative worship. In my own, subversive ways have introduced some pieces around Tze worship. On top of or over and against Holden Evening Prayer, no offense, but it was the beloved in this congregation, and they've wondered how we can diversify and experience different styles of worship, and this has been one way, mainly around Tze music and focus.
Thank you.
Deb Steele from St. Luke in Portland, Oregon. I'm not sure about experience other than lots of Holden Vespers throughout the year. But
great. Thank you.
Jim Steele, also St. Luke Lutheran. I've been involved as a worship musician for ever, but am here more out of curiosity than anything else.
Wes Howell from Trinity Lutheran in Pullman. We do Tze. Is considered contemplative?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. We do that every other Wednesday. We alternate it with Holden Evening Prayer. And I've been doing centering prayer, and we have a centering prayer group that meets Wednesdays after that service for a half hour every Wednesday throughout the year.
Cool. Yeah, as you're listening to this, you're hearing the resources you are to one another, so that's great. Okay, let's keep direct then.
I'm Leif. I'm from Shorby, Minnesota. We should talk after. And my home congregation is Our Saviors of the Church in Circle Pines. We don't do that there, but I was introduced to centering prayer in seminary via a children's book, which I now own.
You want to tell us what that is?
I don't remember the title.
Yes, exactly.
I don't remember the title.
Okay. Super. Yeah.
Marilyn Halber from Coos Bay, Oregon Bay, Coos Bay, and we do Tuesday during Lent, and we do the older prayer during Advent.
Super. Okay, let's see. Back row. Let's see. Is that perspective?
We're Phil and Maxine Sampson from San Jose, California. St. Timothy's Lutheran, contemplative service is very new for us, very new.
Colleen Stewart and Tom Partridge from Prestall, Oregon, just talking to you. Going to the First Presbyterian Church in Cottage Grove. And we definitely do Tuesday off and on. We also, in our home, really love going through the whole evening prayer, one particular piece that we love singing at the piano.
Cool.
I'm a pastor at Holy Spirit Lutheran in Brooklyn, Washington, and we've done a number of things. Tase during Lent, of course, as others have mentioned, and centering prayer, contemplative prayer, Holden during Advent, and I'm really interested in reintroducing centering prayer this fall, so I'm eager to learn here.
Cool. All right, thank you so much. So we're going to share a little bit about the contemplative services at Pilgrim and then about contemplative worship generally. So the 500th anniversary of the Reformation is still visible in our rearview mirrors, and Lutheran congregations and many congregations are still vital communities of worship these many centuries hence, centered in the grace of God and in our liturgical, scriptural, sacramental, and musical inheritances, joyfully received and revisioned for our context. And in what I just said, I'm quoting from one of Pilgrim's core values. So it's at the ground of this worship journey. Pilgrim is in the McAllister Groveland neighborhood of St. Paul, as it's called, and we've been on a journey of renewal and welcome for some decades, reaching out to, we call them Hungry Minds and Souls. In fact, it's our tagline, to be a home for hungry minds and souls. That started when there was an independent bookstore in our neighborhood called the Hungry Mind Bookstore, which has since, like a few other bookstores, closed. But we think of Hungry Minds and Souls as those exiles, pilgrims, spiritual sojourners who have been figuratively camped out on the front steps of our congregations. Occasionally, metaphorically peering in the stained glass windows, looking to see, what are they up to now? Is it safe for me to return? And you can think about all the reasons people have exited or stayed away for a while. So, in worship, we have sought to be about it inviting, welcoming, reaching out to some of those hungry minds and souls. And what we've discovered and sought to do is that these contemplative worship services on Sunday nights have been a portal of return for many of these people back into the Christian community. And along the way, they've become part of our signature as a congregation. So we are told that if you're in the Twin Cities and you ask someone, have you heard of Pilgrim Lutheran Church? Invariably, people will say, yeah, isn't that that church with those Celtic and Nordic services? All right. So contemplative worship in a busy culture, we might think of as countercultural. Well, all of gospel is countercultural in our context, right? But So, and we even, for some years now, have had on the side lawn of Pilgrim, we don't have much lawn, but some Adirondack chairs, as a symbol of that invitation to come and rest, enter into Sabbath, into contemplation, and we have even some inscriptions on the sides of those arms there. So, so in terms of our context, how did we get into these particular contemplative services? And there's a handout there that gives you an overview of these services for the next year. So, yeah, that's true. I served in an international church in Stockholm. And so, you know, we've got these Nordic services. Yeah, I studied Norwegian college. Yeah, I, like many of you, immigrant forebears that came from a Scandinavian country. And yes, I got to, I had the privilege of serving in some worship laboratories like Golden Village and campus ministry context. And yes, I've led groups to Iona and Scotland, the Iona community, which we can talk more about. But really, as we considered our context for ministry at Pilgrim, a few things rose up. We're right in the middle of three colleges. All three have some kind of connection to something Celtic related. So St. Thomas has strong Irish roots, McAllister, strong Scottish roots, and St. Kate's would regularly have a Celtic spirituality conference. So you could say it, offering a Celtic kind of service was indigenous in our context. And then we also had a relationship with Dick Hensold prior to starting these Celtic contemplative services. Then Nordic, well, we know about our Nordic context in the upper Midwest, but Nordic folk music is some of the most popular ethnic folk music in the upper Midwest. And then in more recent years, we've become the home for the Minnesota Compline Choir, a choral contemplative service. They were at Central Lutheran down in Minneapolis for years and did a radio service, that basically, and then they're searching for a home, but we can talk more about that. So, and then something I'm always eager to tell people about, then as we were reflecting on these things, we found out about, and I'm going to put up a slide a little bit later, about these worship renewal grants available from the Kelvin Institute for Christian Worship. It's Lilly Endowment money, money funneled through this Ecumenical Institute at Calvin College in Michigan. And all of you can apply for these grants. And every January there's a deadline for a vital worship grant. Congregations can get up to $15,000 a year for a worship renewal. And there's very few sources for such things. And I find that remarkably people don't know about these grants. So we got one of those, and we first launched the Celtic service in 2002. And then, you know, anytime you start something alternative, I love the book title, one of Eugene Peterson's books, titled A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. You know, you can try something new for a few months, and then, oh, it's not working, whatever, but you have to kind of keep at it for a while. So we kept that for a while, and then I wanted to share this quote with you. Our current ELCA Bishop, Elizabeth Eaton, in 2002, when she was a synod bishop in Ohio, she was quoted in a Seeds for the Parish article that the ELCA put out in publication, Seeds for the Parish. She was quoted saying, "When I was still in the parish, we offered Celtic Christian worship on Sunday evenings once a month. I got the idea from a story I read in Seeds for the Parish about a congregation in Minnesota that used Celtic worship. Eaton, who is of Irish and Transylvanian Saxon descent, was attracted to the idea of a Celtic service. Quote, it's a service of the ancient church, nothing new. It is worship people practiced long ago, she said. For Eaton, it was another kind of worship service for those who like prayer. Along the way, we've been studied by a sociologist at the University of Minnesota. She published the results of her study were published in the Journal for the Scientific Study of Religion in 2015. It's available online. Her article is titled Loose Connections and Liberal Theology, Blurring the Boundaries in Two Church-Based Communities of Spiritual Practice. I'll read you her abstract. We used a mixed methods approach, including ethnographic fieldwork, interviews, and a survey to study two innovative Christian contemplative worship services housed in a mainline Protestant congregation in a Midwestern city. These services employed boundary blurring practices designed to attract the de-churched, those who have been involved in a Christian congregation in the past, but who had at some point disengaged from organized religion. Though attracting some formerly de-churched participants, these services were far more successful in attracting several other constituencies united by their liberal theology and by a preference for loose connections. We argue that these worship services are best understood as thriving communities of sustained spiritual practice where contemplative rituals sacralize both theistic and extra-theistic Christian and non-Christian symbols and beliefs. Now, if we have time, we can talk more about this loose connections thing. Someone asked me on the way in, and Roy is happy to help. So what about this starting time? These Sunday night services on the second and third, fourth Sundays of the month start at 6:51 p.m., which is, of course, the death year for St. Aidan, one of the early Celtic Christian saints, 651 A.D. I'm joking about, of course. So he's commemorated on June 9th, along with two other of the Celtic Christian saints in our commemoration calendar. But when we started these services, we had an ad hoc group, sorting out, we're growing, we had another service, what would it be? Would it be Sunday morning or in the evening? And so when we settled on 6:51 p.m., Celtic, and then we rolled it out to some other committees at church, and we kind of smugly said, well, 6:51 p.m., guess why? Knowing, of course, they'd have no clue. And they didn't misspeak. They said, oh, that's our area code. We were shocked. No one had noticed that. How about that? The spirit moves. So 6:51 p.m. All right, so the arc of these liturgies, Celtic, Nordic, and now a Compline or a choral contemplative service. We're going to be shifting away from Compline to other kinds of choral contemplative. But some of the pieces, so let's start with Celtic. Communion follows the historic arc of a communion service. How many of you were here on Sunday night when we did it on Sunday night? Okay, so we're gonna, but most of you have experienced it. Instead of a sermon, we call them word weavings in a Lectio Divina kind of style, weaving scripture and poetry around a theme. Some letting go of the printed page, meaning some mantras, when we sing short sung pieces repeatedly enough that you might lose yourself in the mantra. And seeking to be more right brain, and I'm going to come back to that. Some people wonder what makes it Celtic, what makes it Nordic. In the case of Celtic, the music is Celtic in style, composed by Dick, and the sources all have some, the textual sources all have some sourcing of Celtic, so the Carmina Gardelica, which is one of the leading sources, collections of oral reported, they think, back to the 1800s of Celtic kinds of prayers and things, and then also the Ionic community, some of their things, although they would claim much of their things to not be Celtic, but we know that. And then, Dick, do you want to, at this point, some things about the Celtic service, and we're going to travel right on to the others and then come back.
Sure. I'm wondering if I'm guessing maybe in the interest of flow, maybe it'd be better if we came back to that.
Okay.
You think?
Yep. All right. And then the Nordic service. More we've tried to choose music, folk music. They call them religious folk songs. They're in all of the Scandinavian hymnals. They'll tell you what region they're from. They're not under copyright. That's convenient. But of course, we opted for songs that haven't made it across the ocean so much already. So of course then we have, well, what do we do for text? So mostly I have written new texts for those melodies. Nordic folk melodies have this amazing character of being, tend to be minor and with a lot of chromatics in them. And for us, we would say just hauntingly kind of melancholy. Although if you look at those hymnals, they often have very upbeat texts paired to those melancholy tunes. So the Nordic service for us is more shaped by the character of the music. And then our word weavers, we have some word weavers in our group. We have a team who take turns creating those word weavings on Sunday nights. You want to raise your hands? And have tended to opt for some Scandinavian sources of text. We have one person who does all the word weavings for the Celtic service, very generously so. And then the Compline service, I remember years ago, as pastor leading the Compline service right here every Thursday night, straight out of the hymnal. But we've kind of enlarged that a bit in a variety of ways, including something called sonic meditation, which I can tell you more about. All right, I'm going to shift to the slides real fast, and then we're going to talk about some of the character of contemplative worship, some particular things. So now let's see if I... Okay, so just to go through these quickly, a little bit about Pilgrim. Former Missouri Synod, became AELC. Mission statement, tagline that I referred to. There are 7 core values that are nice definitions of them, of each on our website. Yep, there we go. Now there's a little outdated 2013, but something about the age distribution of the congregation. We have a lot of kids. But they don't come on Sunday nights. It's not really a child-friendly service. Okay, some images from Celtic worship. Three places for the readers. These candles that get put in the sand, Celtic cross during the prelude. It's communion. The lights are down. And we have a classic neo-Gothic space, which is, you know, lovely with candles all around. And there's people putting during the prelude.
Do you have an overhead view of that cross? It's kind of hard for people to see the shape of the...
No, we'll see. No, we don't have any drones yet.
Can everybody see the cross? No drones?
Yeah. So Carla... Kindly.
The real dancer.
So we bring
Jones are real dancers.
These 3 symbols to the table during the opening gathering words. It's a little brighter than it actually is. Oh, this might be from the... We do a Celtic Christmas Eve service. We started that, I don't know, 10 years ago, in between the bouncing off the wall, kids one at 4 p.m., and the classic one at 10:30, and when we started this one, it immediately became our biggest Christmas Eve service. I mean, the response was just immediate. Mm-hmm. But this isn't, that's not a Celtic service. I mean, I don't know how to get in there. I do not,
who's that bald guy in there?
I don't wear an all for the evening, so that's the clue. This was the morning we did something. We've done different things with the closing benediction about people facing each other. You heard me invite people to look at each other the other night. Okay, then Nordic, we have youthful cantors. So we have a lease quilt in the middle there. If you go to Scandinavian churches, you'll see these round globe-shaped things with candles, and there's often places for people to add votives. And I'm told we're one of 3 churches in Minnesota that has a lease quilt. Gustavus Adolphus College has one, and Nidikirk and the Norwegian Church in South Bend. And one of our members made it. So we have a Nordic cantor who studied ethnomusicology and knows how to do the Norwegian shepherd calls. Have any of you ever heard that? It's really striking. We've got a little video, a little audio clip, and a hard iron fiddler. And this is a group of all the youthful cantors there all at once. And there's various guest musicians. A group of hard iron fiddlers. Here's the Calvin information. The next grant Deadline is January 10th. I'm going to leave that up. Okay. Oh, no, there's supposed to be a video. Let's see here.
That last one, wasn't that the Finnish group?
Yeah, I think so.
I can't think of their names.
I'm going to skip the video. So any of you can go to the Pilgrim website. There's a 3-minute video clip. I think it's on elsewhere on the flash drive, which, and you can hear little sounds, including these amazing shepherd calls that Peggy does. Okay. Now, so about contemplative worship. So I think it's the case that in our traditional Eucharistic liturgies that are in Evangelical Lutheran Worship, our red hymnal, those of you who are using it, or the green hymnal, there's recommended 3 spots in the service for silence. One is during the confession, one is right after the sermon, and one is right before the benediction. Most congregations don't observe much of those silences. What we've done is we've marked those silences with hitting the singing bowl. For us, it's a glass singing bowl. Sometimes they're called Tibetan singing bowl, but we didn't want to kind of, we don't know anything about Tibetan anything, so it's not a brass. Say what we do. We're just, it's a singing bowl. But we've marked the silences in an intentional way in that way. So that's a way just to bring in contemplative moments into straight out of the book worship, right? But here's what I want to say, and then over to Dick, what I want to say about contemplative worship. Right brain, left brain. Our worship tends to be extremely left brain. When we're doing all these verbal things, very left brain. Music that tends to activate our right brain. And I think spirituality lives most deeply when we're crossing the hemispheres of the brain. So one of the things we do, particularly we get to do it with Celtic worship, is this underscoring of music in and amongst the readings. And Dick's actually doing a session this week where you can learn more about how to do that. Because he's composing, he's creating music that weaves in and amongst those readings. So I think that's a particularly strong contemplative gift that we can share, because we, some years ago, I learned the term cognitive imperialism. It's that kind of like there's only one way to think versus cognitive inclusivity. How can we draw upon all of our different ways of knowing? That's its own. Tom Traeger, a homiletics professor from Yale, has written a whole book on cognitive inclusivity. Sermons. He goes through how to have your sermons draw upon all different ways of knowing. Fascinating. So, Dick, go ahead.
Which story do you think I'm going to tell now?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, you were just setting it up for me to talk about. This is the Mark Anderson Lutheran story. There's a few people at Mark Anderson's meditation workshop. Mark Anderson, our drummer, is a Zen priest. So, and as the people who came to the service on last Sunday noticed, he does this roll down, what he calls a roll down. It's this drum pattern that starts slow and gets faster and faster and faster and stops. And that is what we use to set up our long meditation. And when Pastor Carol and I were designing this service many years ago, I was saying, yeah, we need the silences need to be long. And we were standing in the middle aisle of the nave arguing about it after a rehearsal while Mark was carting his percussion instruments down the aisle through it, and he was kind of walking back and forth loading his truck. And in the conversation between Pastor Carol and I was, I don't know about these long silences. It just might be too much. These people are Lutherans. It might make them uncomfortable. And as right as she said that, Mark walked by and he said, good. The Zen priest thing. Okay. But you were talking too about the right brain, the left brain, and the function of silence in the contemplative services. And it's, I think, part of the motivation for putting these services together is that there are so many churches that that feel like in order to attract new people that they need to have a more energetic service. So you get these lots and lots of praise services, and actually any city is going to have dozens of them, and hardly any contemplative. So it's like you were talking about mainstream services being a little bit too left brain. It's almost like there's two polarities to worship. There's contemplative and ecstatic, and the longer a congregation is around, the more it kind of tries to strike a middle ground between those two, and then people will then miss the one extreme or the other and be hungry for that. And most people go to the ecstatic side, go to the side of adding praise service. Hardly anyone goes the other direction. So there's really almost a bigger need for that. Almost a bigger need for that because the other has way. Go ahead.
We're talking about contemplative services, or contemplative services. What are the aspects that makes it contemplative?
That's a good question, and I don't think you can come up with a laundry list because
my starting point.
Because to come up with a laundry list would be a left brain answer, and what you're looking for is a right brain answer. You're looking for that this.
And I think in some ways the answer to that might be. Because now I want to add into the circle these stories from Minnesota Pilgrims. Can any of you share what has made these contemplative services at Pilgrim a contemplative experience for you? Short answers?
Quiet. Repetition.
Mm-hmm. Slowing your breathing down, your breathing rate.
Finding, I don't know how to say this the best way, but finding sacredness in things that that might not necessarily be traditionally sacred. So, you know, the word weavings, it's scripture, but it's also poetry or prose or other things. And it's a new way of looking at those pieces of liturgy.
Often it's the different, being exposed to different words than you usually find in a regular church service, the poetry and the stuff, so that it makes you think or wonder about it and stuff. Because it's not a hard calculating thinking about what's being said. It's more of a, just kind of, okay, that's different. What does that mean to me, you know?
Reflective.
It's a place where it gives your right brain permission to use its imagination. It's a place where you can be a spiritual kid, where you can follow thoughts and see where they take you. You know, when you first come in, it's like, one of the comments a lot of people makes is, oh, I love this church service because it's not churchy. But the other part of it is when you start coming for long enough, it opens you up to a deeper experience of spirit. It gives you it's directed my mind towards a more abstract spirituality.
I think
there's space in it's not a rushed kind of things. There are spaces of quiet, and spaces as it moves from one thing to another. You don't get this feeling like I gotta do this and this and this and this. It just kind of, it flows very slowly and orderly, but deliberately.
I think your brain is signaled though, right from the very beginning. candlelight being such a significant part of that meditation. And you are handed the beeswax candle when you walk in, and the silence, and you light it from the main thing, and you're immediately drawn in that quiet to the cross, or in the Nordic, where you come in silence, and you're invited to move that light around the church. That I for me, that just is a signal to your brain that this is a total transition, and here you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To build on that point, part of it for me is what isn't there. If you're actively involved in a congregation for a long time, your life in the congregation, on Sunday mornings, your mind's abuzz with people you need to talk to and things that you need to get accomplished. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't seem to have a place on Sunday night in these services. You set a different tone and a different purpose, and you enter a different space.
Mm-hmm. It seems that we all have that knowledge that for people coming into the church that were brought up in the church, that liturgy is a wall for them. You find that having a contemplative service reaches more people?
Yeah, so I could talk at length about this, but so when we really did aim in these services when we started them to reach out to people who might not otherwise come to church. So Sunday night is not a convenient time for the Sunday morning people, right? So if they want to double dip and come to the, well, it wasn't really for them. Once in a while they say, it was on a different day. So most of the people that come in the evening have been non-members. Some then start coming in the morning. Some have been coming, and some of them are in the room, been coming for years to evening worship, and they are not members of Pilgrim. So it has been great outreach. And then one of the questions we've been asking ourselves is, well, so over time we've learned to say we have the morning community and the evening community, mm-hmm. two totally different communities, not a whole lot of overlap. Mm-hmm. But then we've been asking ourselves, how can the evening community be more than a community of strangers to one another? So I sort of know them like I can tell you, they've been coming for years. Sometimes I don't know their names. Sometimes they stop at coffee afterwards. But how can they know one another? And some of us as clergy know that there, and others that have studied within theology, in the Augsburg Confession, Article 7, offers a definition of the church. The church is where the gospel is preached and the sacraments rightly ministered. And we say as Lutherans, that's all we need in order to be the church. So we could say, if all we did was offer Celtic evening worship, well, we'd be being the church by that definition. However, I think that's a medieval definition, because if we only offered Celtic worship and people go right out the door, very grateful for the service, right out the door, I'd say, we're not being the church, because there's not that lateral dimension of people connecting with one another. So that's a whole other topic, So we feel called to. And we've tried some experiments of trying to invite people into alternative avenues of affiliation in the evening. So, okay, they're choosing not to become members. Are there other ways in which they could kind of raise their hands and say, but I feel connected? And we go to Iona. I've heard some of those evening pilgrims tell people at Iona, oh, you should see our Celtic service. And I hear that from our Celtic service. They feel ownership identification, but they're not members. But they've been coming for a long time. So we're continuing to try to invite people to be woven with one another, not only with this service that they feel fed by. Yes?
I hope it doesn't change the conversation, but one of the things that I found out is that leadership has to relax structurally, because when I started doing Taizé, it was very... you will do Taizé and you will like it, and you will do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It was very structured and outwardly structured. And now we do Taizé, Marcia's here, our pianist. And I just started by saying, when Marcia is ready to begin. So I'm not trying to direct the whole thing. And she's not either. And then that mood is kind of... And even in Taizé, when I was in Taizé, when the time came for that big chunk of contemplative in the middle that they have, people did all kinds of things. They pulled out books. They did contemplative, as we would consider, centering. Some of them had, they did everything. And so just not trying to direct it so much, but just kind of setting up the pieces and then just letting it flow.
Interesting.
Was really
yeah, that is interesting because we have a lot of those elements in our Celtic service too. And I think I knew about that tradition in Taizé, that it had a strong improvisatory bent to it, and so does our service, and that's one of the elements that our service is really pretty eclectic. You know, and you ask what makes it a Celtic service, it's really more of a contemplative service than a Celtic service. It's got some Celtic elements, but it's also got Taizé elements. It's also got Zen Buddhist elements. It's, you know, what else are we pulling out? Oh, the Lectio Divina thing. So it's got a bunch. It, to answer Bill's question about what makes it contemplative, we're sort of experimenting with and pulling out every stop and trying everything and kind of tossing it all together in a pretty eclectic way. But to give you an example, a lot of times when we repeat how many times a short melody is repeated, ordinarily we don't assign a number.
Yeah.
Ordinarily, we read the room.
It just feels right.
Yeah, we read the room and we do what feels right. The length of the silent meditation at the minute in the middle is the same. It's not timed. The prelude that we play is the same prelude we've been doing for the last 17 years. Every month, free improvisation in E minor, which is what we did last Sunday. After we played a tune first, and then we kind of segued into the free improvisation in E minor. And the musicians at that point are really kind of consciously, only to a certain point, consciously trying to read the room, trying to feel the energy of the room and support that and reflect it. And with the music, a lot of it is really trying to find that middle ground in the role between sort of worship leadership and worship reflection. In other words, we're trying to take the energy in the room and work with it, but we also realize that we're Susan, I think you were saying how everything seemed to flow in just a certain way. We're extremely deliberate about that. And Pastor Carol and I are both really kind of obsessive about transitions and flow, and we're usually on the same page.
Yeah, like we don't have any announcements in the middle of the service. That happens at the end, and, you know, stuff like that. And it, but yeah, the flow enables people to enter into it in ways that aren't.
Yeah, I think that's a real critical element. And sometimes you have to just let it happen, but sometimes you really have to make conscious decisions. As a worship leader, and there's music all through the service, so it's often the musicians that are making those decisions about flow.
It seems to me that it hardly just happens.
Yes,
there is so much preparation that goes in. Mm-hmm. You know, the writing, the rehearsing, the setup. It's a very labor intensive operation that seems to flow, but it doesn't just
create. That's very intentional to create the space.
Yeah.
And I was very actually surprised that I didn't know that you guys actually did, because I'm only a sound person. I'm very left brain. This service is not mine, my style. But it seems like it's very intentional and very worked on to make it all work a certain way so that the people can be contemplative who are there.
Right.
And relax.
Right.
Even I find myself relaxing, even though that's not my thing. I find myself relaxing into it because of the way that they've worked to make it work.
And the number of people that it takes to make it seem.
And I guess I should qualify. I don't mean that we're doing it loosey-goosey. But it's not overtly structured. That means there's a lot of stuff happening behind high raises and.
But I still totally agree with what you're saying. There's ways of doing the planning. There's ways of being deliberate, but there's also ways of letting go at the right moment.
You know, another small thing, you mentioned stopping for coffee briefly. I don't know if there's ever any kind of Lutheran gathering that doesn't have coffee, but it's a very different kind of coffee than Sunday morning. You come into the church and you're invited into this totally individual seeking for the time that you're there, and then coming back together in the community over coffee and cookies is another way to just sort of extend and share that experience in common, and becomes a really crucial, I think, to to kind of come together again and share, extend the experience before you go out of the church.
I'm kind of taken by your comment about the Sunday morning and the Sunday evening communities, and I'm wondering, are there observable differences between how those two communities engage in the balance of the life of the congregation?
Well, and some of this is, I think, why the researcher that did this article gave the title Loose Connections. Mm-hmm. And then she had an earlier title and she changed it. And I even have along with me a Christian Century article from 2011 about loose connections. So I think some of the difference is loose connections. So
can you tell a little bit what that means?
Well, so some, how about, let's try this. Those of you who are part of the Pilgrim community, they said it broadly, but who are not members, would you raise your hand? So these are all evening worshipers who are not members.
They're not half the group.
So the morning folks, well, you know, we have the learning hour in between the two morning services, you know, people might get involved with task forces, committees, small groups, da-da-da-da-da. The evening community, some have membership in another community.
That's what I was wondering.
Some
are nuns. fair number of nuns come to this.
N-O-N-E-S.
Yes.
Right?
N-U-N-S.
No.
Former Roman Catholics, you know, people who felt like so. But I think that evening community, some have found it to be, that's about as far as they want to put their toe in the Christian community. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of continuing to have that be a part of their journey. Some have another community they're sort of connected to. Some, what other stories?
Some are very active in their home church, their Sunday morning church.
Yeah.
But they find the spiritual that. Yeah. But the contemplative that can't find.
Yeah.
And some are clergy who like to be able to worship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is there any integration in, say, the outreach or the missions of your church?
Well,
what was the question? Integration of the mission. Carol, do you agree?
So connection in the missions of the
church? As far as your outreach to your communities or to, is there a participation from both worship?
Well, one of the connections has been as we've tried to, we're going to talk some about that. I'm hesitating. Some of this on Friday, this parishial renewal session. Okay. But we've tried to let the evening community know that we need them, that they're very invested in it. We need them to invest in it. So we started with a grant. Oh, the grant went away. Mm-hmm. And so to keep this going. So we've invited the evening community to pledge, not a whole lot due to Pilgrim's ongoing ministry. And then we have, as we've grown and things, we're talking about time consuming, it was really clear that if we didn't add staff, this might not continue. And so we did a human capital campaign. And we invited the evening folks to pledge toward that. We added another full-time pastor. And we did it via a human capital campaign. And so that's been another point of join us in the, I mean, this pastor isn't going to only be working with this, but just we can't keep everything going. I mean, I've really been the one who stood at the door of, and greeted all of these people for all of these years, like the only one that could tell you, oh, they've been coming here for 8 years. You know, but you know what? Only one person. We are very committed to shared ministries, meaning, you know, strong lay leadership just across the board. So, what else would you say? Have we, I mean, evening worshipers, are there other ways that we've brought the two communities together? Well, these journeys, like a journey to Holden, a journey to Iona, has been great cross connecting in that way. But
some people go.
But if they come in the morning, then they become members. They tend to come, right?
That's it.
So yeah.
So that's a crossover that some do get back into the what you think of normal membership in church.
Yeah.
And become morning members as well.
Yeah.
But they usually kind of still come in the evening, unless they start having a whole bunch of kids. Then they stay home with them.
Or they join the choir.
I had to really get home to the evening. It's been going now, 18 years? So some of those, you know, people could come back because their kids are old enough to leave home now. It's not a real kid-friendly service.
So I want to make sure the pilgrims that are here, any other stories you want or thoughts you want to share in this circle? Yes, Mike?
Just wanted, I was on the vestry very early when this was going, and there was some concerns and some stuff about, you know, you talk about integration, and we were talking about theological integration. You know, these people have moved away from church for whatever reason and stuff, and they're going back, and they were bringing in some people that have never been church, and what do we really want to do about, you know, bringing them, invading into the Lutheran fold? And at that time, you know, we were contemplating that, wondering how we'd be done with stuff. And I don't think now that we have found that to be such a, we got to do this. You know, we got to indoctrinate them. We got them, here's what it is to be a Lutheran, and here's what y'all got to learn to do. We're not as hung up about that and worried about that being the practice and their own growth and everything, the way we're doing things is more important, I think, than any kind of, you know, checklist or something.
This blue sheet that you are going to take anyway in just is an overview of this next year of contemplative worship. So this kind of gives you a sense of the bigger picture laid out and names of some of the musicians and things. And actually this year, we're adding a contemplative Easter sunrise service for the first time. And some said, why did we never think of that until now, since we have a Christmas Eve one? One other thing I want to share, I've got little pieces of paper up here. So we're inviting Augsburg Fortress to consider publishing the Catholic service because people want to use it. So there's an email address here for one of their staff that you're welcome to email and tell them, yeah, your congregation or you would be interested in music. So just as a way of letting them know there's interest, you know, so not.
Is that the same one that was in the program folder on Sunday night?
No, that was, thanks, for that was, you can let us know.
I see.
So then we can let you know when it gets published. But subsequent to that, we thought, you know.
Sure, let's bug them.
You might want to just let them know, you know.
Email, can we use our worship folders from Sunday night?
No.
Keep your channels open to GIA too.
Yeah, right.
They're very open to publishing.
Yeah, we're trying to, you know, be good team players if Augsburg Fortress says no, that we have to. Because we, you know, there's a bunch of information to know about. Here's, you know,
And it's hard to resource people, you know, on the fly. So we just want to stay here, you know. So, but we need help.
You know, so. Well, we can improvise an E minor without violating any copyright.
Yeah. And Dick's going to tell
you. My blessing.
He's going to tell you more about that when he comes in.
And then actually that's what my Thursday morning workshop is really. This was meant to be kind of a general thing about our service and the creation of our service. And if you want the nuts and bolts of what we do and how we do it, Thursday morning, and I'm doing that one.
One thing that I think is...
Go ahead. Julia, then Janet, go ahead.
Just that seems to me, even being a left-brain person, that's crossed over for both, and it has to do with our worship time. It's become more comfortable at Pilgrim to have silence even in Sunday morning, mm-hmm. to have longer periods of time. At our church, when I go to other churches, it's like, whoa, what happened? That was too quick. Because there's some intentional pauses after prayers and different things that we didn't used to do, I don't think. So that, for instance, it was interesting to me to watch the community here when we had the long pauses. We don't feel as uncomfortable quite. It still is a little bit, but not as much as some people are like, oh, what do I do? You know, and I think we've grown. I think even the Sunday morning community has grown because of that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say that as one of the word weavers for the Nordic service, and Marcia is also, and also knowing what Suzanne, who does all of the Celtic worship services, says, it's a real blessing to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it takes probably a month.
I was just working on my September one.
Because you have to, you get to read a lot on a theme, and then narrow it and figure out how the scripture and the poetry fits together, and what words you want to repeat to emphasize the theme and direct loosely how people are meditating as they hear the words. So it's a spiritual practice for us.
A labor-intensive spiritual practice.
Yeah. There's a wonderful book up in the bookstore by Ronald Rollheiser about four legs of a healthy spirituality that he says are good for people, for congregations, for the national church. And one of the things that he says is a personal relationship with God, which Lutherans can kind of go because we have that piety piece that freaks us out. But I think that that's probably one area that we've been really deficit in. And as a result, we're handicapping ourselves as a church. I think it's one of the pieces we're missing. But it's so encouraging to hear, because for me, when I allowed myself to kind of start reconnecting to God through contemplative and through, it was just like my soul, like, where have you been? Or it was more like God was saying, where have you been? And it really does spread out and affect the rest of the congregation as well. So personal relationship with God, being concerned about the things God is concerned about, so there's social justice, community, and a warm heart, a loving heart. And he said, if you're missing any one of those, you're limping.
I'd like to reinforce that point too, because I'm sort of surprised that we don't see more people from Sunday morning than Sunday evening. He said, well, if they want to double dip, I don't think it's double dipping at all. They're very different experiences, and I cherish both. But the evening services had so much that, for me, personally. And so I think they should be complementary, not this or that.
Yeah, it's just tough all in one day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Some wish it was midweek or something.
Well, and they are very, I'm kind of the anomaly that started coming in the evening and then joined the choir, which sings 3 out of 4 Sunday mornings at church, on Sunday morning. So it's hard. I never regret going back in the evening, but it's often hard, you know, there's still some of that residual, like, okay, like I've gone to church for the week, I can check it off. And so I'm pretty consistently like trying to push that away, but. Yeah, they are complimentary.
And clergy will tell you, coming back to church on Sunday night is not something they want to do. Getting up from those Sunday naps, et cetera, can be challenging. Go ahead.
I agree. Well, how do you find the community in a tri-college area? People go through undergrad for 4 years and they're gone. Do you have that sort of cyclical nature to your community?
So we don't actually get a lot of undergrads coming to these. We're part of a young adult project through Augsburg University right now to reach out to 22 to 29-year-olds who are all around us. So, and some of them come in the evening, but not so many undergrads.
Jane Ann and Marcia said it's a blessing to be able to write these things, and no matter how much work you put into it. It's an even greater blessing to be the reader of these things, because you realize that you are, after all their hard work, you're the one who stands up there and actually leads them into this contemplation time. You're the one who is painting pictures in their minds, so that you get the reader gets the opportunity to really probe the words, whatever they may be. And that can be a contemplative exercise in its own.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we're at time, and there's a next session in here. So again, reminder, if you want to write to Oxford Fortress, thank you. And thank you for the rich conversation. I look forward to it continuing while we're here together.